There's a lot of revelations that are coming. And it's happening. We're in the age of what's called Satya Yug. And Satya Yug is the age of truth. There's these in Hindu, and I don't want to say Hindu, but like in, because Hindu is not really a religion, but in, if you will, Sanatana Dharma or the Vedic texts or just history, there's time cycles. Everything works on a cycle. And there's these things called yugs, which is a time cycle, a span of time. And traditionally, it's known that there's four, but I believe secretly there's five. So there's, can't remember the first one, but
Should I look it up?
and I can't remember the orders of them. Yeah, you can look up what are the four yugs? Yugas, YUGAS.
Yeah, they're not gonna have all five.
They will, but they'll say that two of them are the same, which they're not.
Okay, we'll dive into that in a second.
Yeah.
Age or yug. So that's another thing about Sanskrit is they always usually end with an A, but like when you pronounce it, you're supposed to just like
You
cut
could
it.
say yuga.
Like pranayama. You're supposed to say pranayam.
You can say both. Both
Okay.
are accepted. I
Both
don't know
are
why they
accurate.
do that, but both are accepted. Because when you were reading the yagya, I
Yeah.
said yagya, but it's yaga on the screen.
Okay.
So you can say
Yeah.
either way.
Interesting.
Yeah, you could say either way.
Let's see here. I'm counting one, two, three,
Yeah,
four. Are
can
they five, six?
you want me to pronounce them? If you
Yug
pull them up,
cycle.
I'll tell
Oh,
you.
okay. Let's see here. Is this it? I'm on Wikipedia, so that chart. Because isn't like the Kali Yug one?
Yeah,
And maybe
so
this is
here
it?
we are. Yeah, so there's Krita Yug,
Wait, hold
which
on. You're
they
not in your
oh, my
microphone.
bad. So there's Krita Yug, and they say it's Satya, which is the same, which is not, from my understanding from my guru. And then they say there's Treta,
Bring your mic with you.
there's Dwarpa, and there's Kali. So Kali's just come to an end, right? So all four of these cycles have just come to an end, and now we're entering into Satya Yug, which is really the fifth. It's not the same as this one.
It's not the same as Krita.
No, it's the fifth, from what my gurus have explained to me. And so Satya Yug is the age of truth.
It's also a lot longer the way they have it written here. It's a lot longer. So maybe that's okay,
No,
so
even
there's
those timelines are probably not fully correct
okay,
because
so here's one too. Yeah.
yeah.
Well, see, this says though that the Kali Yuga is supposed to be lasting until 428,000 CE.
Which again, it's not proper. Not proper because it's already come to an end. Kali Yug's ended. So if you look up the what is Kali Yug marked by, what are the characteristics of Kali Yug?
Let's see here if we click this. Is the fourth, let me see if I can zoom in on this. Fourth and worst of the four in the Yug cycle, preceding Dharpa,
By Dwarpa Yug.
following by the next cycle, which is Krita Satya Yug, but you're saying it's just
It's
Satya.
just Satya, yeah.
Satya. It is believed to be the present age, which is the full of conflict and sin. According to pranic sources, Krishna's death marked the end of the Dwapara Yug and the start of the Kali Yug, which is dated to they have an exact date, 17th or
So let's
18th of
read this
February.
line. This is the important
Okay.
one.
Near the end of the Kali Yug, which is what we're approaching, when virtues are at their worst, a cataclysm and a reestablishment of Dharma occur to usher in the next cycle of Satyug, prophesized to occur by Kalki.
Kalki, which is the 10th avatar of Vishnu.
Okay.
And so essentially, what they're describing is Kali Yug is total corruption, world-ending tragedies, right?
Right.
So if you think about the last 100 years in the world, and you think about what's happened in the last 100 years, it's been marked by absolute
World
devastation.
wars.
Exact. Nuclear weapons, nuclear
Yeah,
war, right?
nuclear
And the
war.
threat of nuclear war looming at all times, all the way up until the birth of my guru. The moment my guru took birth and his purpose was
Which was
established,
when?
his exact day, I don't know.
Do you know the year?
I mean, the exact day I know, I don't know the year. Yeah.
Okay.
So I know his birthday, I don't know the year.
Okay.
But it hasn't been very long. But that was the mark of the end. So if Krishna's death was the end of Dwarpa Yug, Krishna's birth is the mark of the beginning of Satya Yug.
Interesting.
And so now the age of truth
But
begins.
like roughly 20 years, 30 years.
30 to 40
30
years.
30 to 40 years.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So around there. And so if you look at all of the knowledge in the revelations that have happened just in the last 5 years alone, how much truth has been exploded.
Insane.
So it's the age of truth. Think about how much corruption went unnoticed 5 years ago. Right? 5 years ago, how much people didn't realize what was going on in the world. Ever since COVID, everybody's like become extremely aware. The intelligence in people has just tremendously jumped, right? To where conversations like maybe our government doesn't have our best interests in mind is like easy to have with people. Whereas before...
It seems like that's something everyone agrees upon, too.
Yeah, of course.
Like, no matter which side of the aisle you're on, no matter whether you're a vaxxer or anti, it's
yes,
like...
But 5 years ago, 5 years ago, that conversation wasn't always an option.
Right.
It wasn't always an option. And it's not even just that. It's about other sciences, like cosmic sciences. People will talk about them. Like, we're having this conversation right now. Having these conversations with, like, normal friends back in the day was not common. But...
Dude, it was kind of cool, actually, yesterday.
Yeah.
It's interesting you bring this up, because yesterday we were talking about the Magdalen manuscript, which talks about like how to use sex energy to like charge your astral body. And I had a buddy of mine who's like into this stuff. We were getting out of the sauna, and on his back, he kind of had like the snakes intertwined, kind of like the, what are they? Like the hospital sign where the two snakes are going up the pole. And they intersect. And on the sword, it was like through a sword, and on the sword were like all the chakras. It was like red, orange, yellow, green, blue, purple. And so I started talking to him outside the sauna and outside of the locker room. I was like, hey man, like, dude, this is actually a really sick tattoo. Like, and I started explaining to him like the Magdalen manuscript about how you can charge your astral body, like, and what this is representative of. He's like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. Like, I've never heard that, but it makes sense. We walk into the restroom, and I see one of my jujitsu professors in there, and he's like, what was that you were talking out there about, like, charging your astral body? And, like, so I start, like, explaining it to him. I probably went a little too high in my explanation because I was so excited.
Yeah.
Probably started
We've
saying
all been
a little
there.
Too, yeah.
We've all been there.
Probably started explaining a little too much.
Yeah.
But the reason I bring that up is because he was, like, into the conversation. Like, he didn't fully understand what I was saying, but there was, like, a glimmer in his eye of, like,
curiosity.
There's something here I should learn.
Open-mindedness.
Yeah.
Right?
And then he went on to say how he meditated the other day. And, like, then I saw him later in the day, and he was like, yeah, like, I started thinking more about, like, what we were talking about. And, like, you know, I've been meditating more, and it's, like, not on purpose. And I'm like, it's happening.
Yes.
It's happening.
Of course. I mean, just look at social media nowadays. The type of knowledge being exposed there. Like, and it's amazing. I think it's beautiful. And it's probably why Babaji assigned to me, you know, the task of trying to create this social media.
And you know what? Here's actually a really good thing I thought of. I'm going to give you this. You should do this. I think all social media platforms should do this. But what I've noticed is, like, with Threads, what's really beautiful about it is, like, I'm taking into it the energy of, like, trying to find more connected individuals of, like, on these certain paths. So what... There's like a kind of like a meme, if you will, that goes through Threads where people are like, here, I'll pull it up so you can see it.
Yeah.
Where people are like, dear algorithm. Let me see. I'll pull it up here. Oh, I got to sign in and stuff. That's going to be a whole process.
Yeah.
Where they'll say something like, dear algorithm, bring me people who are like environmentalists, do yoga, and they'll have a whole list.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
And so the point is like now you're feeding the algorithm like these words. And so it's like, oh, okay, I'll bring you people who are also doing this thing.
Right.
And I think the beauty in it and what had me realize is like people have been on Facebook for 10 years. Who you were 10 years ago is not who you are today.
Yeah.
So you need to have some sort of system that is going to purge out or like even just reset. So now you're like getting new information from the person of like, okay, who are they now? Because, like, that's who you want to cultivate or even, like, bring forth with that.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely AI models that do that.
Yeah.
They won't scrape data from, you know...
That long ago.
No. Everything's based off your recent activity. Like, real time, blah, 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 whatever. But, I mean, just basing a platform off of that, that's pretty cool. I think that, I mean, if more platforms focused on that, but their focus right now is more so, attention. Just looping. Yeah. Loop. Yeah, well,
So then maybe this is a good segue, because I know you briefly talked about it. You're making an app. You're making a social media app with the blessing of Mahavatar Babaji.
Yeah. Well, with the guidance. Blessing and guidance. Yes.
So what is it about, because I know I signed up. It's not fully released yet. I know I put my email in to the thing a while ago. So whenever you guys get that. So I'm interested in that timeline. But before we get to the timeline, what is it that's going to be different about this social media platform?
Right. So essentially, the way it was described to me was that, there's a platform that China uses. There's a platform that, Japan uses. And then there's platforms that Americans use. There's a platform that Indians use, right?
And so when you say described to you, from Babaji?
Yeah, Babaji and my gurus. Yes. Okay. Yes, yes. And so essentially, there's a turning point in the world right now where the world's going to come together in a way that it's never been brought together before. And part of that coming together is creating a social media platform that bridges the gap between country, right? And essentially, Amara is going to be that platform. It's going to be, I say it's going to be, this is just what it was described to me as. And so it's going to be a platform that brings people from all countries together, regardless of language or interests or whatever. And so right now, the way the world's set up is we're all segmented. So, it's easy to think that your culture is the only culture in the world. But, one thing that I think should be part of every person's education is to live in a different part of the world for an extended period of time.
So powerful.
It's incredibly powerful because, you grow up with all your own traditions, your own ways, you're set in them. And then, you get put into an environment that you're not used to, and it makes you understand those people better. And then it makes you realize wow. So these people's cultural norms, it's not like we're against each other. It's not like we don't like each other. It's that this is what they grew up experiencing. And, you can come to appreciate the beauty in another culture just by spending time in that culture. So, before I went to India, I had a bunch of Indian friends because I was almost certainly Indian in a previous birth, a recent previous birth. And because it just made sense to me, the whole Indian culture, when I went there, they couldn't believe how fast I adjusted to their culture because I was just ready to be there. I wanted to be there. I knew my guru was there and I just wanted to be there so much. And for most people, they probably wouldn't have lasted 2 weeks.
It's a culture shock.
It's a big culture shock, especially if you're not fine if you're traveling by yourself and you're booking your own hotel rooms. But I was living with, people. I was living in their home. I was living in my guru's home. And it was just India is very different than the United States in terms of not very different, but in terms of day to day life, in terms of infrastructure. So the power would go out all the time. Right. They didn't have an AC unit in their home. The fans were the only thing. But if the fan goes out and it's 100 degrees outside, you're there, and it's the norm. So I remember being in there I was there during the hottest months twice, which is February, March, April, June. And it was just so hot. And I remember it's not really culturally acceptable to walk around without a shirt on there. I'm outside, but in the home, even in the home, you don't not wear a shirt. I'm I can't wear a shirt. I explained to everybody in the house. I just can't. It's so hot to me. I'm so uncomfortable with how hot it is that I can't wear a shirt. But it made me come to appreciate when I came back to the United States, I just saw Indians totally differently. Indian people in the United States totally differently. I'm like, oh, I can see exactly why you're making certain decisions in day-to-day life. Mm. Now I understand why, you make these decisions. It just made sense to me. So a lot of people would judge somebody from another culture coming into their country. They'll be why are you doing this? Or why are you doing that? Well, go and experience their culture. Yeah. And you'll come to appreciate and understand why. And instead of judging them, you'll accept them. And you'll be like, oh, okay, yeah, this is no big deal.
Especially just even little facial expressions or
Yep.
There was I experienced this with Brazilians. Yeah, so I went on a date with a Brazilian girl. and the lady came over to take our order. We were at a restaurant. We were sitting down. And we're kind of looking at the menu, and she wasn't really answering.
This was in Brazil?
This was in America.
In America.
Okay. Yeah. So she was a Brazilian in America. And we were sitting at the restaurant and looking at the menu. I was like, oh, I know what I want. Like, do you know what you want? And she kind of like stuck up her nose and like kind of gave like this like scoff look, like kind of like a like sort of look. And I was shocked by it because she's like a really nice girl. I'm just like, what the fuck was that? Like, I was like, okay, yeah, give us a second. So our waitress is like, okay, like no rush, da da da. She walks away. And I'm like, what the hell was that? And she's like, what? I was like, that face you made. She was like, oh, I just don't know what I want. I'm like, you looked like you were disgusted with me. And she was like, oh, that's just like a face of like, I don't know.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm like, so what?
that's funny you say that. I actually, when I was in high school, I dated a Brazilian girl, right? And I think her mother came to the U.S. when she was young. And so when the mother was young. And so the mother was very Brazilian, spoke English, obviously. Not obviously, but she had learned English because she had to. And she wanted to, of course. Aside from the point, the way they communicated, I always thought they were yelling at each other when they were speaking in Portuguese to each other, Brazilian Portuguese to each other.
It's very fast and loud.
I thought they were yelling. So I'd be in the house getting so uncomfortable. I'm like, oh my God, her mom is pissed. She's pissed. They're both pissed at each other. And I remember talking to my girlfriend after. I'm like, you know, what were you guys fighting about? She's like, fighting? We're just talking. I'm like, what? No way.
There's so much energy.
Yeah, well, I mean, and then you look at how Italians communicate. It kind of makes sense. They're constant. Like, I'm Italian, so when the Italian blood gets going,
yeah,
it seems like you're yelling at someone, but really you're just talking extremely loud. Yeah. So, yeah.
Dude, yeah, there's a good joke. I forget who said it, but he was, like, talking about how he went over to, like, one of his Middle Eastern friends and, like, you know, they spoke Arabic or whatever. And he was like, the kid would get like called into the other room. And all I'd hear is, he'd come back in and be like, my dad wants to know if you want a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. it's like, I thought you were about to get beat.
So one thing really cool about like, from what I've experienced in like, Arab cultures or Indian culture, like Eastern culture, is how quick they are to offer you like food and drink when you're like a guest in their home.
Brazilians are so hospitable.
Oh, they are too.
Yeah.
Okay. That's awesome.
They're amazing.
But maybe it's just Americans that really don't do that much.
I think so.
They're very like, we're very much private with our lives here.
Yeah.
Very, very private.
Especially like, Northeast. Especially yeah. Northeastern people.
I mean, it's just, yeah. It's so cold, dude. So it's like, stay away. Yeah. I don't know what it is. I'm kidding. Yeah. But like, I don't know what it is, but like when I was in India, the standard is like, I think in their culture, what they believe is like you're in like a guest in your home is like serving God food type of thing, something like that. They just know it's very good karma in a way, like it's ingrained in their culture to offer your guests at the very least tea. And I love tea culture. They do it in Italy. They do coffee culture, right? Where they take coffee breaks, right?
Okay.
They do it in Arab culture. But in the U.S., it's like we go in the morning to get a huge cup of coffee. We drink it by ourselves. We're wired on the way to work, and then we crunch numbers, and then we go get another one by ourselves. There's no like sense of community there.
So, yeah.
But we have our own things, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. Dude, it's fascinating, man. It's fascinating all the little things. Because I know in high school, being Italian as well, loved Italian food. And so my only viewpoint of when you would say like Italian culture or, you know, let's say Greek culture was food. Like yeah. I thought that's what culture meant was just, oh, they have different foods. I didn't realize how much actually was in the word culture until I went and really dove into, you know, Brazilian culture,
yeah.
Like understanding the little different nuances, the way they spoke,
yeah.
You know, and there's like just little things too. I'm having a hard time thinking of an example, but just like little things like kids there, for instance, until they were like 28 or 29, they lived with their parents. Like,
oh yeah, that's
just a thing.
Well, that's standard in a lot of cultures outside the U.S.
The grandma would really raise the kid. So yeah. It was like the mom would basically, you know, find the husband. And it seemed like there was like kind of broken homes, but they weren't really broken. Like a lot of kids out of wedlock. I don't know if that's just what I was exposed to in Brazil. I'm not trying to say that's all of Brazil.
You know, there's this concept explained by Osho, where I was reading some book by Osho, and he was saying, like, it's, you know, family's good. The family unit's okay. He definitely didn't say that, but he said something about the family unit being like this place where you're pretty much like impregnating all your own thoughts and your desires on your kid, right? And that it's important for the kid to be exposed to, you know, other parental leaders, like not just the two father, mother, but like the grandfather, the friends of the father, mother, the, you know, like essentially like a village environment, right? Or a community environment where there's multiple people and you can go to any of them to talk about your problems or your worries or your fears and your stresses. Because a lot of times what's happened in modern culture is two parents don't live out their life the way they wanted to, and they try to live it through their own two kids.
Yeah.
And whatever fears they have, they pass down to their kids. Yeah. And whatever stresses and worries they have, they pass down to their kids.
What do you think that just takes care of itself then, if people are actually living their dharma?
Oh, of course.
Like, you don't really need to...
So you find me a group of a country that's living their dharma to its fullest. I don't think it exists as of right now. It will happen. You know, that's why Krishna's here.
Yeah.
But the way society's structured, it doesn't allow that fully, because like if you want to get on a plane tomorrow, like I was able to leave the United States for 2 years because I had zero, I thought I had responsibilities, but I had no responsibilities. Yeah. I had no debt.
Right.
That was the only thing that would have kept me in the U.S. was debt.
Yeah.
So I dropped out of college. I had paid my way until that point. Like, and yeah, and that was like, I had no monthly payment. So I was able to just, when I was in that car, like trying to make that decision whether I should stay in India after the first 2 weeks, it was only supposed to be a 2 week trip. Like, I was able to be like, okay, well, the ultimate thing here is I don't have a bill to pay. So I don't have to go back home. Yeah. I'm not putting that financial burden onto anybody else. So, yeah.
It's freedom.
Yeah.
That's real freedom.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Wait, so let's get back to the app, because you're saying that it's going to be something that crosses essentially borders, right? So like, how
it's
do you
meant to bring unity in love and peace? It's supposed to be an enjoy. Sorry, you go on with your question.
No,
I don't want to interrupt.
No, that's a good point, right? How do you achieve unity when there are so many cultural differences, when there's a language barrier? How do you bridge that gap over social media?
So we have some plans that I probably won't share for the next phase of the app until we do it, just because I don't want to put the ideas out there and to just gathered. But for right now, the very first step is to just launch the platform, and Babaji will take care of the rest. I already know he'll, whatever his intentions are, I do what I'm told. He says, listen, you need to gather the people. You need to do this. Like, go onto this podcast, you know, do the conversations, do these things. Okay, no problem. I can do my end. But when it comes to creating luck energy, I can't do that. Like, I'm not Babaji.
Mm.
I look to my gurus for that. So they create the luck energy.
So what is luck energy though, then? Is that a thing?
Yeah, of course. Like, you've never met somebody that's like, you look at their life and you're like, wow, that's a lucky person, you know?
I don't know. I kind of see it as, you know, all their past lives up until this moment mixed with their karma is what created it. Not just like a...
Right, but that's luck too. There's got to be some luck involved, no?
I don't know. What do we mean when we say luck?
Luck is just like good fortune energy, right? Good fortune. Like, it'll go your way. So even a person who's done everything right can still have bad luck if one thing's out of place. So I don't know how to keep, I'm not. Have you ever studied feng shui before?
Not like,
or Vastu Shastra?
I know the idea, but I've not like gone deep into it.
So feng shui and Vastu Shastra, I think feng shui came from Vastu Shastra. And if I'm saying any of these wrong, forgive me, but the idea is you can organize things in a certain way in order to achieve more favorable outcomes, right? So usually most commonly it talks about how you organize your home, like how you set up your home. like the doorway, the landscape, the way you build your home, whether the hallway goes straight through, you can lose energy this way. If you put like, you know, money on a door, it brings in wealth. All of these different things, just creating like energies of luck and good fortune and so on and so forth. It's very much bigger in Eastern cultures, but the people in the West that know about it know about it. Like they know.
Okay.
Like I said, millionaires don't practice astrology. Billionaires do. So millionaires may not know about feng shui. Billionaires do. So
okay.
So essentially, my knowledge is not expansive there. Babaji knows this. My guru Krishna knows this. They're very much aware of how to use these energies to create good fortune around certain things. It's beyond me. So I do as my gurus tell me. My duty is my duty. Their duty is their duty. So essentially, okay. Babaji wants to set up the planet to become like a heaven. So he's creating Mysore as a model city. That's a form of feng shui, right? Maybe it's not a house, but it's a city.
It's a city level.
Exactly. Yeah. So free food, free this, free that, right? Getting rid of the mafia, getting the mafias all arrested, getting rid of the beggars, giving them education, right? He's creating an environment of joy, of peace, of love, right? So the same way I'm creating this app, he'll create the environment of joy, of unity, of peace, of love surrounding that application.
So is it almost just
the actual, if you want, before you say anything else, like some practical things about the app, like there's different unique upload templates I created on it. There's a separate feed for friends and following. So like if you want to see what your friends are doing and not have to worry about all the people you follow on top of that, we created a news feed where you can friend somebody, you can follow someone, okay. Or you can do both. And so if you're friends with someone, you have a news feed. You go through all your friends and never have to worry about not missing one of their posts again, which is pretty common on current social platforms because of all the noise going on.
Yeah.
And then you have a following feed. So all the people you follow, you can look at their content that way. So the way I see it is you follow content creators, you friend friends and family type of thing.
Have you thought about, and this is something I actually just recently posted on Threads. Have you thought about changing the terminology from following to like connection?
That could be a thing, right? That could be a thing. I mean, I wouldn't put it past us, but just for the basic knowledge, like for the general human right now, I think following is just the easiest way to but it could turn into connection someday.
I'm just thinking about it from the energetics of words.
Yeah.
It's like followers. It's like if you have a million followers, it's like.
But some people like that, right?
Well, feels like it would feed your ego.
So I had this whole ideology that you're explaining right now, but some people enjoy stuff like that. I don't want to take away the joy of somebody like, how do I explain this? So essentially, if you're deathly afraid of something, right? You don't overcome your fear by avoiding your fears. You overcome your fear by going into your fear. So if you're an ego person and all you care about is followers, get all the followers you want. Go get them all. Like, do your thing. I totally support you doing that. Like, go for it. And at some point, if you're ready in this life, you'll realize, okay, followers isn't everything. It's not.
Now, this actually ties back to a question I had earlier in regards to the story with Kamsa. And did I say his name right? Kamsa. Kamsa and him starting these pubs and money and loans. Is that like, because like when you think of a guru, you think of like an enlightened master who's going to like show the way. And so it's like that would be like a feeling that would be negatively charged, right? To create people in fear and scarcity. But is it something that's like on Kamsa's path to be like, okay, maybe you need to understand what this energy is? Like,
well, that's a great question. I mean, that's a pretty profound question that you're asking. Like, did the guru at that time have the insight to know whether or not Kamsa should, like, did the guru at the time think of as in like his karmic path?
Yeah.
I don't know. But I do know that there's different levels of gurus for sure. Like, I can be right now. I explain to you the Adams thing. I become a guru for that moment. But in the next moment, you explain something that I don't know, like whatever it may be, you become a guru in that moment, and I become a student, right? And so at this time, I'm supposed to come. I mean, at this time, anybody can be a guru, a student. But when I say guru, guru, and I mean a true guru, one that's going to guide you to enlightenment, to your highest purpose, that's different. I look at Mother Nature as a true guru. I look at her as she has my best interest in mind. She knows my karmic journey. She knows my path. Like, she sees this. I trust her more than, you know, I trust her to put the trust in me, type of thing. And same with my gurus, Babaji and Krishna. Like, I put my trust in them entirely, knowing that they see my karmic path far beyond what I see. So did Kamsa have that type of guru then? I don't know. Was he just a knowledge-based guru telling him his knowledge, knowing his, not knowing his karmic journey? I don't know. That I don't know. But true gurus versus, or the way my guru would say it is the right guru. He wouldn't say true guru. He would say the right guru will guide you on your path. And I think Mother Nature is the right guru.
Interesting.
So, yeah.
That makes sense what you're saying, though. It's like, because this actually ties back to the conversation I had with this guy in the jiu-jitsu bathroom around the chakras. Because at the end of it, he's overweight, and he's overweight. Yeah, he's bigger. And he talks about how, like, what can chakras help you do or something like that, being aligned. I'm like, well, I could do a lot, right? But one of the things he's like, oh, can it help me stop eating pizza late at night? And I was like, and I gave him the insight of, like, you need to be okay essentially with eating pizza late at night. Like, maybe that's, and I didn't explain it to him like this, but in terms of our conversation, maybe it's a part of your journey to experience eating pizza late at night, because having the negative energy of feeling guilty for eating that pizza is going to keep that karmic loop going.
Yeah,
that's samskara. You're going to keep doing it because you're like, all right, this is the last time. And then you do it, and then you feel like shit. And so, like, just that energy of feeling bad is attached to the action.
I always tell people, enjoy what you're doing to the fullest. You know, that's what my guru always taught me. Enjoy it. Just enjoy it. Even if you feel like, if you know something's the wrong thing, but, like, I mean, wrong. But, like, if you're going to have murder. Pizza. Yeah. But if you're going to have pizza, it's like, enjoy it. Move on from it. Don't beat yourself up. It's the mental conversation, like you were saying, that is what ruins all great things. So it's just that guilt that can suppress you, that fear. Yeah. When you're in that place, like, you don't come out from anything. But if you're in a state of enjoyment, a lot of times you know when to stop. Like, you know when is enough and when's not. It's like, oh, okay. Like, that was great. And it lasted while it lasted. It's over now, but it's okay.
Right.
So it's the people that have this conversation going on in their mind that carries it into the next day, into the next day, into the next day. It's like, oh, but I had pizza yesterday, and oh, I shouldn't be doing it again today. I'm such a bad person. And it's like, well, since I'm already a bad person, I might as well have pizza again today.
Yeah. Because that's what bad people do.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yes. Bad people eat pizza. I'm a bad person for eating pizza. So I mean, I'm just going to keep
it. But if you love pizza, eat your pizza, you know? Like, that's how
it brings you joy. Because that's like a whole other level.
I make pizza, dude. Like, side note, I love making pizza. Like, ever since I was a kid, I've always, like, pizza's been, like, just a staple in my diet. I don't know why I love it. I went vegan for a few years. Tried to figure out how to make pizza properly vegan. And I do a pretty good job nowadays making it vegan, but I'll throw cheese on every once in a while. But, like, forming the dough, the process, the whole, like, learning how to make the dough properly. It's such an enjoyable thing. Like, the fermentation process is such a knowledge, like a lost art, in my opinion. And I made grapes. I mean, into wine. I turn grapes into wine. That's how you make grapes.
Not
I
water.
Mean, wine.
You don't turn water into wine. Haven't gotten there yet.
No, I haven't gotten there yet. But the fermentation process, it's all a fermentation process. And it's a knowledge that we were never taught in school that I would have loved to learn. It was so cool. But that was just a side note with the pizza thing, that I enjoy pizza. And, you know, I'll have it multiple times a week. I don't care. You know, but the ingredients you're using matters as well. So if you really love pizza, if you're this guy, this Brazilian jiu-jitsu guy, my suggestion to you is make your own pizza and make it healthier. It's much healthier when you make it yourself. So
that's good advice just to know.
And just the effort going into making it makes it so much more satisfying too.
It's like connection piece.
Oh my God, it's unbelievable. Like, it's just, so when I made the wine for the first time, it's like, I wasn't like expecting it to be such an enjoyable process. There's not a lot of things that you can really just enjoy the process where you're not like looking forward to an outcome. I wasn't like, oh, I really want the wine. I was more like, oh, I want to learn how to make wine. Yeah. I wasn't dying for alcohol. I was dying for, you know, a cool hobby and just the process, because my grandfather had always made wine. He had passed away. We had all these grapes and we had all the, you know, the things to make the wine. And it's like, well, who's going to make the wine? And I'm like, you know, I'll learn how to make wine. Why not? Let's try. And I had this great experience in India where they tap into a palm tree and they extract palm wine, right? Which is just this very, very mild, mild, mild alcohol. It's the only time I had alcohol while I was in India, the one time. And it came from a palm tree, like a coconut tree, right? Okay. And it was just called palm wine. It was just water that was in the tree that had fermented for a little bit from the sugars in the tree. And you drank it and you don't get really drunk or anything, but like, it definitely lightened your mood a little bit in a way. And it was just such a cool process. So I'm like, okay, well, my whole life I've only really been fed the chemicalized alcohol that, you know, these stores give us. So maybe I want to see what it's like to just take grapes and turn them into wine and see what happens there. And I ended up with this fantastic end product of like this kombucha grape juice that obviously if you drink too much of, you can definitely go to the wrong place, but yeah. Moderation.
Get those demons in there.
Yeah, yeah. No, we don't want those. Nah. Definitely don't want those.
Oh, that's cool, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, especially avoiding those demons. Because, like, I guess then there's a level of, like, how much alcohol you've taken on, and then you're still able to invite in the right demons. Is that maybe a way to look at it?
So I told you about my experience when I was 19, where I was, like, my lowest. I was so depressed. I was so anxious. I was partying the most. I didn't know what I was doing with my life. And that's a result of all the alcohol I was drinking. And so I quit. I quit doing it. I mean, it's not just the alcohol, obviously. It's a result of the environment I would put myself in, the thoughts. But the alcohol plays a big role in your thinking, your thought processes, right? If you've ever woken up with a hangover, are you ever like, oh my God, this is the best day ever. I love today. No, you don't wake up thinking
today's definitely
that.
Better than the last.
No, you're like, today sucks. I'm so hungover. I don't want to do anything. I'm not going to the gym. I just want to eat fast food and chill on the couch and complain about my life. So if you do that over and over again, if you do that more than once a week, right? In college, you do it, what, 3 times a week at least?
Yeah.
I shouldn't say 3 times a week, but maybe it did get to that point when I was in college. And that's a very bad mindset. That breeds for a terrible environment. Like, your thoughts have literally changed. Now your body reflects those changes. So no wonder why I was so anxious, so depressed. It's like, okay, well, you set yourself up for this. So when I quit and I just, you know, took to like reading books that I really enjoyed and doing things that I didn't like, I had to get rid of all these other energies around me. I had to get to know myself. So I stopped hanging out with the people I knew for like, I was best friends with for like 4 years,
yeah,
5 years. And I'm like, yeah, no, I'm not going to go do those things anymore. I need to get to know who I am. And that's how you're able to reverse those things. So, and then eventually you have to find, in my opinion, eventually you have to find a guru through nature or through an embodied guru or through Paramahansa Yogananda to take you to
the next stage.
Yeah, the next stage, eventually.
Well, and this is where it gets interesting for me is like, you know, we're talking here about, at least you, I mean, probably both of us have cultivated karma and energy in our past lives that have come through into this life that makes certain things attainable easier. Probably the best way to word that. So in regards to this first 19 years of your life, like this not knowing, this confusion, like for me it was probably 25 years. The first 25 years were very like, I don't know what's going on, I've got questions, but drinking's kind of cool and fun, and doing drugs is cool and kind of fun, and having one night stands is kind of cool and having fun, so I'm just going to kind of go along with it. To me it seems like, especially when it comes to meditation, this is something that I had to have been aware of in a past life of doing, maybe had a guru, enlightened, whatever. Why is it then in this first 19 years for you, 25 for me, that this was just a mystery. Like, do you have any insight into why it wasn't just pick up where you left off?
You have to, in order to become enlightened, right? So this is what my guru, I asked my guru this same question. He says it, he said, in order to become enlightened, you have to first know the dark. If you don't know the dark, you'll never come to appreciate the light.
Mm.
And so I asked specifically my guru, why all of those years? Like, that was tough. Those were tough years. And on the outside, maybe it seems like I was enjoying my life, but on the inside, it was, you know, torture. I just remember asking him, I'm like, and I didn't really even need to ask him this. I just knew internally, like, if I had not gone through those experiences, I would not be so passionate about teaching people an alternative way. I wouldn't have the experience to connect with people. So it's like, if I didn't have that experience in high school, then how can I convince a high schooler that's doing it now?
Right.
So it's like, you have to have a certain energy to yourself where it's always planned. There's always a higher plan, but the energies, when I look back at my life, they put me in those situations so that I could handle the situations I have today and be able to relate to the people that I am with today. Because without those experiences, I couldn't speak to a younger audience. Because it's not, don't get me wrong, it's not the older generation that's going to change the world right now. It's the younger generation that's going to change the world. This plan that Babaji has in place appeals most to people our age and younger.
Yeah.
Like, if I was to explain to my mom about Babaji coming and, you know, creating a free food, free free education, free Medicare environment, maybe she'd be open-minded, but that older audience would be like, no, we worked for everything back in the day. Like, you got to work hard and blah, blah, blah. It's like, I understand hard work. I also understand smart work. I also understand having open-mindedness to see a bigger picture in a brighter world, in a better future. And so it's really the younger kids that are going to be able to be willing to respond to a message like this. And having those experiences, I'm able to go and talk to these kids and be like, hey, like, even my little sister who's 16 right now, her and I are like, or 17, her and I are like extremely good friends. They're like best friends.
Yeah.
I can relate to everything. Maybe I can see her making decisions that I'm like, you know what? I wouldn't make that decision now, but at the time I can see why you're making that decision and I'm not going to stop you. But if you come to me for advice, I know what to say now. Because I can relate to you on such a deep level. Like, I remember what it was like being 17.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't take those experiences away, and because they all lead to who you are. They shape you as a person. So, which is super cheesy and cliche, but it's true.
But it's, you know, there's some deep wisdom in that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, because it does seem like, what is it? It's like you can't relate to people if you haven't been where they're at.
Yeah.
So you have to be able to relate to them on some level of like, okay, I've been there too. I remember when I did this. I remember when I made this decision and this was the outcome. Is that the outcome you want? Probably not. But yeah. Do you need to try that to realize you don't want that outcome? Go ahead.
Yep. Especially with, so I feel really tied to American culture. I'm very upset with the culture in America, especially surrounding the youth with the heavy alcohol use, the heavy drug use, the heavy, you know, prescription medication use. I'm very passionate about, not passionate, I'm very energized to help fix that problem. I don't believe that this country should be sedating or doing all these things just so kids can concentrate on something they don't care about. Like, it doesn't make sense to me. You should not be stressing out an 8-year-old, a 10-year-old, a 16-year-old, even an 18-year-old. You shouldn't be stressing them out. 20-year-old, 25-year-old. You don't create wonderful things from stress. You create wonderful things from open-mindedness, from clear-mindedness, from love, from peace, from happiness. So if we want to create a world filled with joy, filled with peace, filled with all these wonderful things, then we have to work to create an environment for these kids that induces all of these things. But the environment right now is the exact opposite.
Oh, yeah.
Which upset is naturally upsetting.
I see that. I see that in teaching jujitsu, where there's a couple of things that occur that are touching on what you're saying. Number one is the way that parents talk to kids. Like, okay, are you okay? Like, take a little bit. Like, they don't talk to kids how we talk to each other.
Right, of course.
That's the first thing that drives me insane.
Yeah.
I'm like, why? It just doesn't make sense to me. I'm like, yeah, they're younger and we can use smaller words. Like,
right, right.
There's times where I'll even like use a word and I'm like, do you guys know what that word means? They're like,
yeah.
No. And I'm like, no. Okay, well, what it means is like I have to update the speech.
Yep.
The other thing that really drives me crazy, and we kind of briefly talked about this earlier, is like being direct without anger, or being like authoritative without anger.
Yeah.
It's like this energy of like they're doing the quote unquote wrong thing. And it's not that they're doing the wrong thing. They're just not doing what you want them to do right now. And now we label that as ADHD. We label that as them be misbehaving. And it's like, oh, they don't want to sit in a chair for 45 minutes and listen to someone talk. It's like, look at your entire day. When was the last time you sat in a chair and listened to someone talk for 45 minutes for 8 hours straight?
And loved it.
And loved
and enjoyed
and
it.
Loved it.
And
yeah.
Really wanted to be
yeah.
there.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
I don't, like, even if it was Krishna or maybe if it was Krishna or Babaji,
oh,
I would sit and listen. Yeah.
I was going to tell you, like, I've sat and listened to my guru talk. It could go on forever.
Yeah.
So
I was
going to
say, I would correct myself there. I was like, maybe I could sit for that. Yeah.
But with water breaks and food breaks. And,
sure.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
45 minutes, we can have some breaks.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But like, you bring in someone who's talking about something I don't care less about.
Exactly.
I don't know.
It's interest based.
Yeah.
It's very much interest based. So we bring, you know, there's billions of souls on this planet, and we put them through the same exact machine. We pump them all through the same manufacturing line. It's like, are you kidding me?
Standardized testing.
Yeah, like, not everybody's, all these billion souls, they're not all the same.
Like, and the fact that we even categorize them by age, like our age is the thing we have most in common. It's like, no.
It's not true.
We figure shit out at different ages, everybody.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Bro, we're getting close on time. And you
what
got
time?
You got
what
plenty
is it?
To catch. It's
what
one,
is that? Is it?
155.
Okay.
Yeah, right. We're good.
Yeah,
okay, we're just getting
bad.
Close on time.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, I usually like to just give you at least 2 hours before your, you know, flight.
My flight's not till 6, I don't think.
Oh, it's not till 6.
You know what? Maybe I should check that, right?
Oh, and maybe was I saying...
think 4 o'clock I need to be at the airport is what it is. Yeah, so my flight's not till 6.
Okay, I thought it was at 4, but maybe you're right.
Yeah, 4 we should be there is the standard practice, right?
Gotcha, yeah.
So it's
maybe I was thinking it was at 4.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, but you pull the plug whenever you feel ready, because I'm down for whatever. I'm down to keep talking or whatever, so it's up to you.
Kind of drawing a blank, so maybe that was intentional. Unintentional.
How long have we been going for?
We're at 2 hours 50 minutes.
No way. That was 2 hours and 50 minutes?
Crazy, right?
Oh my gosh.
What did it
dude.
Feel like?
It did, maybe an hour at the most. At,
crazy.
No, but even then, I'd be like, that could have been 20 minutes and I would have believed it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's awesome.
Isn't that crazy how that happens?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Am I allowed to plug Amara at the end here?
Please do it. I haven't gotten your links yet, but you're going to need to send me.
Yeah. Okay.
I'll have you fill out that form.
Yeah.
But yeah, plug. This is your space. Like, speak directly to the audience.
So
that camera's yours if you want to directly speak to them.
All right. Awesome. Yeah.
But plug your stuff. Tell them any parting words. Floor is yours.
Yeah, absolutely. So essentially, we're launching Amara. It's the social media platform we talked about throughout the entire podcast here. And
you got a little bracelet on too.
Yeah, I got the bracelet. It says Amara, social done right on the other side. That's just a practice slogan.
How is it spelled?
A-M-A-R-A. So amarasocial.com. If you want to check us out and join the wait list, we haven't launched yet. We're launching extremely soon. It's obviously a long process when... you don't have a lot of money and you're not a software engineer yourself. So we're almost there. And I promise you guys, it's an enjoyable platform. And just check it out. And I also, believe it or not, we never got into it in the podcast, but I started a political party back in, I think, 2021 when I first came back to the United States from India. And that's called the American Congress Party. And it's supporting all the ideals that I just mentioned in the podcast today, which was creating free food, free education, chemical free food, and as well as free education and free medication for all the people around, not just the United States, but obviously that's our focus, but around the world eventually. And so, yeah, it's called the American Congress Party. Nothing you can really follow as of right now, but I just wanted to mention that in case it comes up in the future at some point. So if you guys are interested.
Something that's coming up right now.
Yeah.
So maybe this is going to prolong it. But what this is a huge element, especially in my life, and it sounds like with you too, not having money, things being free.
Yep.
How does that happen, right? You don't have any money. I know you talk about this often in your videos. Is like, you don't have money to create this thing. You don't have money to fund this political party. Food's supposed to be free. Healthcare is supposed to be free.
Yeah.
How?
Well, money is an illusion. That's the number one thing that you have to realize is that money is not, it's not real necessarily. Okay. Obviously you have to use money to go about day-to-day life, but it comes back to the metaphor I used earlier in the podcast about my guru being like a forest tree, right? If you become a supporter of Mother Nature, somehow, some way she'll support you. Like, for example, when I went to India, I think I had $700 in my bank account when I went to India, and that was it. And I lived there for 2 years. So obviously that wasn't enough to live there for 2 years. But when I got there, you know, you just find ways and nature just seems to take care of all. That was like probably the biggest reason I was worried about staying beyond the 2 weeks, by the way, was because I had like, I didn't really have money. But in those 2 weeks, my guru had taught me an important lesson on money, which was we planned this trip to Goa, or like we had to go to Goa to do this yagya, right? And just to, for some reason, he knew the energies that time. And so we went to Goa. When I first arrived in India, it was like the first week I was there, and he only had 250 rupees in his pocket. And he said, he looked at me and I had no money in my pocket. Like at this point I probably had like $500, maybe even less in my bank account. And he looked at me, he's like, you see this 250 rupees? This is right before we left for India. He says, we're going to come back. We're going to go to Goa and come back. And I will not have touched these 250 rupees. I'm so open-minded at this point, just so elated to be with my guru, like realizing that I was with him. I'm like, let's go. Let's see what happens. You know, let's just see what happens. And so we'd already bought the bus tickets or train tickets. So that was, that doesn't count the 250, but we show up and somehow this man comes to know of us being there. Right. And he explains that he had a dream 2 weeks prior that Krishna was coming to Goa and that he had to be there to take care of him and like arrive, right? And so he finds out through his cousin that this guy is going to be doing yagya in Goa, some guy, and he's like, that's got to be Krishna, like that's got to be him. And so he comes and meets us and takes us everywhere we need to go, pays for every meal, gives us a plate, like gets us connected with this friend. His friend has a rental there, and his friend just gave us the rental, like the place that he was living at. And his wife cooked meals for us, breakfast, lunch, and dinner every single day. Like, and if we weren't at home getting cooked for, at that place getting cooked for, he was paying for our meals at restaurants. And it got to the point where like they were fighting to pay who gets to pay for it.
Really?
Like, so him and his friend, the one that was like giving us the place to stay and the guy who had the dream, Jay Ash, and I forget the other man's name, they were like, no, I want to pay for his stuff. No, I want to pay for his stuff. Like, it was just this crazy experience. Here I am thinking like, we didn't even have enough money to pay for any of this. And now we have people fighting over who gets to pay for it. So,
wow.
You know, when you're in service to, again, service to nature, she just finds a way to take care of things. And so when I made that decision to stay in India, I'm like, okay, like I don't have to worry about money that way. And I'm not going to worry about money. And so I came back to the United States. My parents' plan was to like kick me out unless I got a job type of thing. It's like, you need to grow up. That's like the standard American culture. It's like, all right, you had your fantasy. You went and lived in India, like grow up, get a job. They never directly said this to me, by the way.
Okay.
But I knew the plan. You can sense energies. You get a feel from what your siblings are saying, the rumblings on the streets, right? You get it. And so it just so happened that the situation aligned perfectly for they needed me to be at home, like to help with some stuff. And it just aligned perfectly, dude. And So they didn't want to kick me out. They wanted me to get a job, but didn't want to kick me out, but they didn't know what to do. So I called that divine energies, bro. They aligned the situation to calm my parents, to be like, okay, you know what? He's an asset to have at home. We don't have to kick him out. Let's make this work, so on and so forth. And it just has been that way for the past 2 years since I've been home. And the situation will eventually change, and I will eventually have to move out and, you know, go into the world. But I know without a doubt that it will happen. Like, I think about the bills I have to pay this month for Amara, for the American Congress Party. I don't have enough money to pay it this month, right? I definitely don't have enough money to pay it. But I know that somehow, out of nowhere, something will happen, and it will just happen. Like, it's so weird how it happens. It's happened too many times for me to not have confidence that somehow the money's going to come. Just somehow. So naturally, if I can go down this rabbit hole of like, or like my own thinking hole and being like, dude, how are you going to cover the bills? How are you going to pay for the expenses? Like, I don't go down that place. If I do, it's for a split second and I'm like, nope. I immediately, like, that's the power of mantra. I immediately say, nope, nature's got me covered. Nature's got me covered. I'm the protector of nature. I serve nature. Nature will protect me. Like, I'm here to protect nature. She's here to protect me. Like, that's the immediate mantra that I just go back to. And, you know, by the end of the month, I'm confident that somehow the cost will be covered. And if they're not, we'll see what happens. You know, who knows?
There's like, something else in play.
Yeah, like, nature aligns everything. Like, she really does. And that's one of the most important things my guru taught me was serve nature, she'll protect you. But if you don't respect nature, not even just serve nature, if you respect nature, she'll give you what you need. But if you don't respect her, she'll make your life tougher than it needs to be. Like, definitely. And she'll teach you the hard lessons until you crack.
And then what are the things you can do to, like, serve nature and get in alignment with being blessed to have everything paid for whenever it needs to be paid for?
Yeah. I mean, don't get me wrong. It's not like I'm driving a Lamborghini around, right? But all your needs are met.
But it's not like you need, it doesn't sound like you need to be driving a Lamborghini.
No, absolutely not. You're right. And so what are the ways? Well, you have to put your own selfish, it's different because I'm in a position where I want to serve nature to like my highest ability. I devote my whole life to serving nature and to, you know, creating the peace on this world and the world that Babaji described to me and my guru described to me. That's my devotion. But the average human doesn't necessarily have to, you know, go to that extent. What they can do is just sit outside, touch a tree, pray to that tree, enjoy the sunlight, touch the ground with your hands, say, I love you, Mother Nature. I love you, Mother Nature. I love you, Mother Nature. That's an easy mantra anybody can do. You say, Mother Nature, if I ever feel like I don't have the power to overcome something, I'll go to nature and I'll ask her. I'll be like, listen, I don't have the power to do this. I want to be able to make the right choice in this situation, but I know mentally right now I'm not there. Can you please give me the power to be able to do this? She'll do it. It's crazy. As long as you're not like, hey, nature, I need $1 million right now. Give it to me. Like,
it's like, that's not what you really need.
Yeah, no, exactly. It'll probably give you what you need. Right, right. It's the difference between what you need versus what you want, right? I'm willing to accept. You got to learn the difference between wants and needs. But even some of your wants, she'll fulfill. She'll fulfill them. Like, she'll put you on your path to, like, where you're supposed to be. And it's crazy. It's just how it happens. When I pray to nature and, like, and it comes through, it's just like, I can't doubt it anymore. That's why I'm not worried about this month. Maybe I'll let myself worry for 10 seconds at a time every few days, but I just know she'll come through. I know it. And if it doesn't happen, then I need to experience something like that. So it's crazy how it all works. I can't explain it fully, but I know that if you pray to nature and you respect her, she'll put you on your path in life. No doubt. Absolutely no doubt. So pray to nature. You make that your daily thing if you want to. If you don't have a practice right now daily, how easy is it to just look at the sky or touch the earth beneath you or to look at the moon and just pray and say whatever you want to say? It doesn't have to be, I would say I love you at some point. I think that's important to like show that you love her and you want to take care of her. But you can talk about your problems whatever your stresses are, you say, like, listen, this is bigger than me right now. This situation's bigger than me. I need your help. Like, if you're struggling and you need to get out of a situation and you know you don't have that mental strength, ask nature for the mental strength. She'll give it to you. And somehow, like, it just, you feel it. You get empowered by it. It happens. And just watch the changes that happen in your life if you do these things. Watch. Mm. It's incredible. It's so incredible. So that's what I would suggest to people.
I'm going to have to try that out. Because I do grounding, but I don't know that I consciously say, I wouldn't say that I consciously connect with nature. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not like, sometimes I do, but it's not as direct as I can feel that you're speaking to it.
Right.
And do you see, the way you're talking about this, do you see a difference between God and nature?
No.
Same thing?
Yeah. I think I see Mother Nature as the supreme, but then I see God as, like, what is God, though? So I can't see God, I can't touch God, I can't feel God, but I can touch nature, I can see nature, I can feel her, and I can speak with her, and I feel her replies. Like, a lot of people do have this connection with God where they can't see them, see him or her or whatever, that being, but they can still connect. But nature is very tangible.
It's very physical.
Very physical. And that's what humans need, is to be grounded, to be brought back to nature. If you look at the Native Americans' traditions in America before they were executed or exiled, or I think both, right?
It's hard to tell.
Right. I think it's both. They were very much connected with the land, very much connected with nature, very much caring of her. No footprint, no, like, no destruction. They knew that without her, they wouldn't be alive. They knew this.
So fascinating you're saying this, because it was like...
Well, think about why they did what they did to these people. It's because their knowledge was that high. They didn't need to pay taxes. They didn't believe in, like, paying tax. Like, why do they need to pay taxes? So nature provides everything they need.
No.
So it's like,
it doesn't come from the government.
Yeah. They were like, listen, you need to pay something. It's like, well, Mother Nature never made me pay. Why am I going to pay you? So
it fits a lot in line with like the land. Whenever they came over, they were like, okay, so like, can we buy this land off of you? And they're like, what do you mean?
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it's everybody's.
Yeah.
And then Europeans started just putting in like, okay, well, this is my fenced off area. Yep. This is my fenced off area. It's like, yeah. What do you mean?
Yeah.
Like, that's interesting. That touches on culture, because it's like, that idea is so abstract, so foreign, of like, what do you mean this specific plot of land is yours? Explain that to me.
Yeah.
I find that also fascinating about, like, even where we're sitting right now.
It's countries and borders. There's no difference.
It's like, but even think about, like, where we're sitting right now. How many thousands of people have lived / owned this piece of land over the last 200 years? It's like, we're not going to be the last ones. So, like, whose is it really?
Very true. Yep.
Dude, Brandon, it's a pleasure talking with
you,
man.
This is so much fun, man.
Yeah.
This
glad you came.
Yeah. Well, thank you for having me, man. This is fantastic.
This is sick.
Yeah.
You're the first one in this new studio.
I'm honored. Absolutely honored. Thank you for everybody listening as well. So, definitely honored to be here. Yeah.
Cool, dude. Yeah. Well, I think we should go meditate out in that park, connect with nature.
Let's do it, man.
Show me some tricks.
Gladly. Happily. Yeah. Let's do it.
Let's make some miracles.
All right.
I'm excited.
Awesome.
All right, guys. Everyone listening, all you conscious monkeys, thank you so much. Love you all. And we'll connect on Amara. I hope so.
Yes.
One day we'll all be connected there on Amara.
On Amara. Yes. Yeah. Yes. If you haven't done so already, go sign up for just put your email in so we can let you know when we're launching. All right.
My email's in there. Is it a Sanskrit word for something?
Yeah. Everlasting.
Everlasting.
Without end is the true translation.
Without end.
Without end. So Amarnath is like a god, if you will. So, but let's say Amara is Amar, without end.
Without
everlasting.
End.
Yes.
Well, unfortunately, we have to bring this podcast to an end. Yeah. So this podcast is not Amara. But one thing that is without end is, if I don't see you guys on Amara, I will see all of you in the sixth dimension. You like that?